Welcome to The Art of Unbecoming, a podcast for visionaries, misfits, artists, and mystics exploring the art of unlearning through spirituality. And by unlearning, I mean unraveling paradigms, belief systems, societal conditioning, or anything that we were taught to believe that's not really congruent with who we are. I believe that a spiritual, creative existence is one of unlearning and unbecoming in order to embody the highest expression of ourselves. Your dream self, your dream life, is already here. You are simply just learning to remember. I am your host, Emma Zek.
I don't even know when I found you or how I found your just magical writing and work that you have put out into the world. I think what really lit a fire under my ass was when you posted the letter that you wrote, because it was so liberating for me as a woman, as a white woman too, who was having all of these feelings, but felt that I was being put against a wall and wasn't allowed to speak them because of the color of my skin. And so I just wanted to commend your bravery and raw authenticity and fearlessness and your fierceness for speaking those words. I'm getting emotional.
Me too.
And sharing your truth in such an authentic way that you not only helped my heart open, but I know that it caused a ripple effect for thousands and thousands of people. So I just wanted to take a second and honor you for that, because it meant so much to me. And I know that I'm not the only one. And I just thank you and honor you for your bravery.
Okay, give me a second. Emma, what are you doing?
I was not planning to get emotional, but here we are.
Thank you. That means the world to me, because I actually discovered your work, and even you might not even call it that, right? I discovered your words and your thoughts towards the end of last year. I would say maybe about October or November. I don't quite remember, but I was in a space where I was coming to the realization that I had been censoring myself, and I had no idea, because I'm quite an outspoken person, and I've been outspoken publicly for the past 5 years when it comes to sex, when it comes to alcohol, when it comes to sobriety, when it comes to so many different things. And with everything that happened in the height of last year, summer 2020, the racial tensions, the silencing that was happening, the blaming that was happening, the trauma, the pain, I started to realize that I had been holding my tongue in ways that were causing me to become very, very ill. But because of the color of my skin, and this is how fucked up all of this is, but because of the color of my skin, I thought that I would be betraying some kind, and I'm getting full body chills as I talk about this. I thought that I would be betraying some kind of cause or betraying some kind of movement if I actually said how I felt about some of what I was seeing. And I continued to silence myself internally, but at the same time, I was being very vocal about certain things. So it was this weird, and I'm sure a lot of people can resonate with this, when internally, you know that something is not quite right here, but externally, you're parroting and regurgitating the same things everyone else is. And by the time October and November came, I realized that I couldn't do that anymore. I didn't have the language that I have now. I didn't have any intention to vocalize these things publicly in the way that I have now, and in the way that I will absolutely fucking continue to. And then I came across your work. I can't remember exactly what the message that I came across was, but you were speaking a lot about self-sovereignty, which you still speak about now. And it really did contribute to me finally saying no, no. I refuse to do this to myself any longer. I refuse to allow the color of my skin, my gender, my external identity to determine what my voice should be. And that's when I started writing a journal piece that became the open letter that I wrote, which is called Why I'm Leaving the Cult of Wokeness. And this letter isn't something that happened overnight. If anyone is watching this and you haven't read it, you can go onto my page here on Instagram where we are right now. Just go to the link in my bio. You can read the whole letter. But it didn't happen overnight. It's not something that happened even in a few months. It's things that I've been holding for the past, I would say, 4 years. But because, again, of the color of my skin, because I inhabit the body of a Black woman, I thought that I would be betraying some kind of narrative or some kind of ideology if I said, no, I don't agree with a lot of what I'm seeing. I've just kind of taken us on a tangent, and I'm sure we'll go into some of the details there. Mm-hmm. But I say all of that to say that you have also played a part in how liberated I feel and how able I feel to be able to share the ideas that I have and share my mind in this way. So thank you as well.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. And I really, that means a lot to me. Mm-hmm. How do you feel? I want to ask you, when did you said October and you kind of read other people's things and were just maybe pulling from a few different sources to kind of come to the conclusions that you have now. When was there like kind of a moment where you were like, fuck this, I'm done, and decided to write that and decided to express publicly?
Mm-hmm. My moment of fuck it, I'm done, actually came much earlier than October 2020. I would say it was in July. It was in July, right in the height of everything that was happening, the intensity of the racial tensions. And I understand why a lot of the conversations that were happening at that time had to happen. I will never dismiss the reality that we need to be having conversations about race, right? However, I personally feel that the direction everything is turning is entirely regressive. That is what I think. That is how I feel, right? Mm-hmm. But July was the time when I was like, no, this is not right. When I saw the shaming that was happening online, this idea that if you are someone that has been racialized as white, you can't say a thing. You can say nothing. And because of the color of your skin, you have to take everything that is given to you. Whether that is you being misrepresented in the most violent ways, whether that is you being attacked by a mob in someone's comment section, in an activist comment section usually, that you just have to shut up and take it. That you are subhuman because of the color of your skin. And if you try and say anything about that, you are centering yourself. You're centering your whiteness. When I started to notice just how cultish a lot of the language was, it really unsettled my spirit as well, especially as someone that is familiar with fundamentalist religion. There are a lot of kind of cultish terms and I started to notice a lot of cultish patterns, essentially. And when I started to see the very same dehumanization that I have seen people of my skin color face, when I started to see that very same framework being used onto other people, I was like, no, something isn't quite right. But at this point, Emma, it was very internal. It was this visceral feeling like something is not right, but I didn't have the language. I didn't have the language, and no one around me was saying anything. everyone was parroting the same thing, silence is violence. But then the trick is when you speak up, now you're centering your white feelings. So what the fuck are you supposed to do? What do you actually do? So you don't say anything. You don't say anything. You're just supposed to take it. So the dehumanization that I saw last summer made me feel deeply, deeply uncomfortable. And it's what snapped me back to reality. And it made me start reviewing everything that I hadn't questioned for the past few years when it comes to social justice, when it comes to collective progress. I started to realize that a lot of it, when you actually look at the actions, when you look beyond the theory and you look beyond what is being said, it's extremely regressive. Mm-hmm. And it's making us more divided than ever. So when I started to actually stop listening to what was being said and to look at the reality of what was actually happening, there was a huge disconnect. And I would say that's when the process for me started.
Do you feel, because I, long story short, I also was in very fundamentalist religious groups. And I remember that exact feeling kind of when all of this tension was happening too. But then when I was about 19, I was in a religious cult. And I remember being the only one that was like, this is very weird here. I feel manipulated. Mm. I feel a little bit abused, for lack of better words, psychologically. And I remember being the only one as well. And I remember that really scaring me, because I would be like, well, if nobody else was seeing this, then I must be crazy, right? There must be something wrong with me. Did you have feelings like that too?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But I would actually say those feelings were very short-lived, because something that I'm really thankful for is that I've always trusted myself. Even when I thought I didn't trust myself, I always fucking have. I always have. So I knew that what I feel right now is true. This discomfort is true. Nothing is wrong with me. Something is wrong here. Something is wrong here. But again, I didn't have the fucking language. I didn't have the language for it. And, you know, I was being forced to hold so many truths at the same time, which I think is such a beautiful thing. So one truth, we need to be having conversations about race. We need to be having them. I will never deny that. I am not the kind of person that will say racism doesn't exist. Of course it fucking does. I've experienced it. But at the level that is being put out, I don't think so. I don't think so. So I had to hold that truth, hold that reality, and also say, okay, but the way in which these conversations are being approached, it's extremely regressive, because if people can't ask any questions, if we're saying that if you have this skin tone, then you can't contribute to the conversation, then what the fuck are we trying to do, ultimately? Mm-hmm. So I was being forced to hold a lot of truths, ask a lot of questions, but not at one point did I think I am the problem. I would say in the beginning, when I was thinking, wait, what's happening here? I maybe started to ask myself, is it just me? But then once I sat with that excruciating discomfort and started looking at everything objectively, instead of just being sucked into my own subjective experience, because of my skin tone, I should feel this way. When I stepped outside of myself and started to look at everything objectively, I was like, no, something isn't right. Something isn't right. So I started seeking different conversations. And I don't know, I'd love to hear if you've experienced this as well. But there was actually a fear of exposing myself to information that might actually confirm that something is wrong here. Because when you're part of a cult, or when you're part of a cult-like dynamic, you're told that you shouldn't seek outside information, that outside information is going to corrupt you in some kind of way, right? Mm-hmm. And this is why, for me at the time, and I would love to hear if you experienced this or anyone listening right now, if something was put out, let's say a story, something was put out and it's, you know, it's emotionally heavy, And because of the media already knows how we're going to respond to these things before we even fucking do, right? Yeah. At that point in time, anything that was factual or data driven or would offer a different perspective, to me, I saw it as a threat. Mm-hmm. I saw it as a threat to the movement. I saw it as a threat to my belief system. I even saw it as a threat to my personal individual safety. So I didn't seek any facts. It sounds fucking mad, but it's the reality of what a lot of people are living, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I was, and I've been in that space multiple times throughout my life, because when your identity becomes so constructed around a certain belief system, like all the things that you teach, anything that challenges that is going to create the most massive amount of cognitive dissonance that you feel like your body's being ripped apart.
Right.
And when your nervous system is not ready to receive new information that will challenge that identity, you will, one, not seek it out, or when it is presented to you, blame the person or the thing that is coming at you with it and tell them that they're wrong, because you just do not want to look inward and reflect on the identities that you're so tightly holding on to.
And that was a huge point of discomfort for me in the beginning, but because I'm someone that actually loves discomfort, and I always say discomfort is very different to pain, because discomfort is essential for growth and expansion, whether you fucking like it or not. I'm sorry to tell you, you're gonna have to get uncomfortable. But it was really fascinating to see just how I felt as if, again, betrayal. It felt like I was betraying the group. It felt like I was betraying Black people. It felt like I was betraying people that stand for social justice, because I was seeking information that could open me up to seeing things a little bit differently. I was seeking information about, you know, cases that were coming out and we were just supposed to respond to them through just emotion. Me being like, wait, what actually happened here? Before I allow myself to be led by social media or a post or a fucking infographic or a soundbite or something that I'm seeing on the news, what actually happened? Can I find out? And of course I can, but it felt like if I try and find out what actually happened, does that mean it was just, it's so fucking sinister.
Absolutely. And the way that you can kind of almost unintentionally gaslight, that term is so overused, but gaslight yourself in those situations can create such a mind fuck, for lack of better words, where there's so much confusion and so much cognitive dissonance that you literally don't even know which way is up. And I resonate too with the feeling like you will betray the system or whatever identity that you're belonging to collectively, because I even felt that as like somebody who previously identified with being a liberal or a progressive. I was like, if I want to identify as this, then this is what I have to do. This is what I have to do as a white person. I have to sit back and just listen and shut up and not speak up and not share when I feel necessary. And that created for me like such a shell of myself, because I was like, we both talk about, I was allowing other people to tell me what I should do with my life, what I should be thinking, what I should be feeling, and essentially what clothes I should be wearing as an identity. And when you're in that space, who's in control of your life? Not you. And that's a very disempowering space and scary space to be living in.
Yeah. And you know what I realized, Emma, that, as we speak, I'm getting full fucking body chills, and they're from a place of realizing how sinister it was, but just how freeing it feels to be able to honor that this was the past and you get to be who you are now. You know, something else that I also realized about that time was that I was always in waiting. And I didn't even know it, because I've always been a vocal person, so I didn't realize this. And when I say I was always in waiting, I mean, I was waiting to be told what to do. And I hadn't realized. I was waiting to be told, mm-hmm. now you should be angry. Now you can feel okay. Mm-hmm. Now you should. I was just in waiting and I hadn't even realized, which is what I'm seeing now in our culture. And you speak a lot about this as well. We are just waiting to be told what to do. Mm. Now you can live your life again. Mm. Now you can isolate yourself. And again, I'm able to hold multiple truths with so many things. I understand, you know, I understand why certain things are the way that they are now, but when you just look at everything more objectively and you just think to yourself, wow, I'm waiting to be told what to do, which means when other people are living in an autonomous way, it's always going to really rub you the wrong way, because how dare you do what you want to do when I am waiting to be told what I need to do and I haven't been told yet. Mm. Right.
Absolutely. It's almost this unconscious, because I've been in that space too. I don't even know if jealousy would be the right word, like an unconscious envy of the freedom that those people have grasped, yes. You know, because, and I love that you brought that up, because I so resonate with that. There is a level of self-responsibility when you are stepping into self-sovereignty that you have to be ready to embrace. Because when you're at this place, there's nobody to blame for your emotional state, for your finances, for anything. There's nobody to blame for anything. And that's scary, because then you look in the mirror and it's literally just you.
Yeah.
And that's a freaky place to be in, like you said, when you have constructed your entire identity around waiting to be told how to feel, what to do, what to think, what to wear, where to go.
And it's usually, I've noticed that because I was very much in, and I'm still, and I hate that I even have to fucking say this, but I'm a left-leaning person, whatever the fuck that means. But for the sake of what I'm about to say, it would make sense. Although I made a declaration the other day that I will no longer say anything like that, that I'm a left-leaning. No, you're just going to listen to what I have to say and you can take it or leave it. Because that. when we say things like that, it's almost as if it's this weird thing, right? Like you have to be like, oh, by the way, I'm not like them. I'm
not a Trump supporter. I promise. I'm not like a crazy conservative person. It's almost like you're kind of having to disclaim yourself to make sure they understand where you're coming from.
And it doesn't mean anything. Right? Mm-hmm. This illusion of left and right, pro and anti, vaccinated and unvaccinated, whatever mm-hmm. the fuck, it doesn't. But something that I definitely realized was that a lot of the people that were in the spaces that I was in were very much vocal, you know, people that considered themselves on the right side of history, etc. But all of us were in waiting, and we didn't see it. We didn't see it. So in the conversations that I have, and in the way that I like to really encourage people, is to just look at everything objectively. Just really look at everything objectively, right? Mm-hmm. Are you actually allowing yourself to have a choice? When you see an article, when you see something on social media, when you're, you know, there's something that's supposed to evoke a very particular emotion in you. What if you were to realize in that moment that you have a choice? You get to decide how you're going to respond. It sounds so simple, but we forget. I get to decide how I'm going to respond to this. Mm. But we're all just being swayed in whatever direction the powers that be, whoever they might be, whether it's an activist or a government or a post mm-hmm. or a whatever, just being swayed all the time. Mm-hmm. And we're convincing ourselves that it's us making the choice when it's really not. Because mm-hmm. to really make the choice, it's quite uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. It's quite uncomfortable.
It's so uncomfortable to sit in that place between the choice. you know, where you have like this I think it's Viktor Frankl, or I think that's him who says, in between stimulus and stimulus and response, there is a choice. And in that in that choice lies freedom, or something like that. I think I just butchered. But that space is comfortable or uncomfortable to be in, because that's, again, when you access that self-sovereignty that we are so programmed away from, and that self-responsibility to be, to say, as a sovereign being, how do I want to decide how I engage with this reality right now? How do I want to create this reality in front of me? Do I want to continue to play into the division, the hatred, the fear-mongering, the just corruptness? Or do I want to choose to see this in the light of love and compassion and unity? And I, coming from my liberal progressive background, I was in the space for a long time of being really angry, especially like I identified as a feminist, and then I identified as like a white person who was just supposed to shut up, like I said. And in those spaces, it was very much me just going along and just allowing, like I said, other people to decide for me who I was.
Right.
And then accessing that space to be like, no, I get to decide to align with whatever I want to align with. It's a really, it's a just a weird, uncomfortable space to be in.
Yeah. And when would you say that you're, gosh, I feel like we could have 200 parts of this conversation, right? When would you say that your fuck it moment was? I'm sure there were probably several, but what would you say was the biggest moment you can think of right now that has led you to, for example, share what you've been sharing recently, have the conversations that you've been having recently? What was that moment for you?
So my mom and my brother, I don't know if they're on here listening, but they're very outspoken and would be considered conspiracy theorists in this realm. And they have been so inspirational to me because they have just followed their heart the entire time they've been sharing publicly. And I remember like being afraid to identify with them on this app and I was afraid to even like share their posts, or people would message me and be like, is this your mom or is this your brother? And I would just not respond because I was afraid to even call them family because of all of this messaging that I allowed to just seep into my being. And so it was actually when I got out of America, I left the States and went to Mexico about 2 months ago now, and I saw everybody of all colors, races, and creeds communing and living their lives. And I then was just, I had the contrast of Mexico and then America, and I was like, America is living under such an elusive state. We are living and giving into this delusion of these narratives that continue to keep us divided and in fear. And so I don't know, I call it a portal that I stepped into or something like that. Maybe just the energy of being around other human beings that were not living in fear about anything and were so free within themselves that really triggered that in me and helped me remember who I am. And I just had this realization where the veil was lifted. And I was like, I had the same realization as you were. I was like, I have been censoring and it's making me sick. I literally felt like I was slowly withering, but then I would blame it. Again, this is where the victim consciousness comes in. I'd be like, well, the world is just hard right now and blah, blah, blah. Or this is how I'm supposed to feel. I'm not supposed to feel good as a white person because the pendulum has to swing and I just have to take this on. No, I was feeling miserable and I was suffering because I was stifling my voice. But our ego is so tricky, you know, and likes to kind of spin it in ways and to find anything other than our own selves and our own choices to blame.
Yes. Oh, that's so powerful. Powerful. And isn't it so interesting how we will, like you're saying with your mama and your brother, how we will resist the truth for so long, even if it's right in front of us, even if it's in our family, we will resist it and resist it because the narrative and the ideology is so strong, especially the spaces that we both occupy for a very long time. Mm-hmm. They're very, I mean, the echo chambers, nothing can get in and nothing can get out. Mm. Nothing can get in and nothing can get out. And I always like to make it very clear when I can, because again, people, we need to be able to hold multiple truths and understand that there's always context, there's always nuance to this. I have people in my life that do fucking incredible activism work. Mm-hmm. They work with the communities. They remind their communities that they are not victims. Here mm-hmm. in the UK, in the US, in Asia, in Africa, I am connected with those people that do everything I can to raise their community, not to remind them constantly, constantly, constantly that because of the color of your skin, you will always be oppressed. Because of the color of your skin, you will always be oppressed. And if you have a white friend, even if you're 3 years old and you're a child, they are the oppressor. So mm. that is the dynamic that you will know for the rest of your life. So many incredible activists are fighting against that message, but you will never hear them. You will never see them on the news talking. You will never. You will never. Yeah. You will never see them amplified here online, right? Mm. Because, and I always talk about this, where there is division, there is so much money to be made. And you only have to look at history. I mean, we're not saying anything radical or revolutionary here. But when I also started to disconnect from being over engaged with everything that was happening online and started to actually look at the real world that I was living in, it helped me snap out of it even more as well. Because then I started to think, actually, what is the truth of what is happening in my world right now? I know this is what is being put up online, that there's always going to be victim and an abuser, always in every situation. There's always going to be the oppressed versus the oppressor in every situation, in every interaction. This is what you should be looking for. You should be looking for malice and bad intent in every single interaction. And then when I would step into my real world, I didn't experience the things that I was being told that I experience every single day. Mm-hmm. I didn't experience. So it was just this, and this is exactly what is happening, where we're so tuned into these spaces that we start to believe that this is actually the reality of what I'm living every day, even when there's evidence that shows you otherwise.
Mm. I have a story that I would love to share demonstrates exactly that. One of my dear friends is an actor here in New York City, and he traveled out of state film like 2-3 months ago, in December. And he identifies as liberal, and he met some Trump supporters that were on set. They were in this neighborhood right outside of Philadelphia. And he was like, they were really kind people. They would make you a meal. They were sweet, just small town folk, simple-minded people. And then the Capitol riots in America happened. And I literally witnessed him the next day complain to me how horrible white people were and how he could not, or how horrible white Trump-supporting people were and how he could not believe how evil they were and they were dangerous and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Which, yes, there are obviously, again, the multiple truths. I don't identify with anybody as a purely evil being. I don't believe that about human beings. But yes, of course, there are some quote-unquote Trump supporters that may be dangerous to other people. Let's just say that could be true. But at the same time, it was so fascinating for me to witness, because he had this firsthand experience of these wonderful, kind people. And then as soon as he got on the news and saw that narrative, he accepted it and flipped. Mm. And it made me think of how many times I had done that with other people or with my own self, where again, it goes back to like allowing something else outside of you to define your perception, and then you allow that perception to define your reality, and then you're going to go and seek out experiences, and I would even venture to say attract experiences, if you want to get a little woo-woo, yeah, that confirm, yeah, those biases, so then you continue to stay in that echo chamber.
Yeah, yeah, yes, you just nailed it. You just nailed it. Because confirmation bias is a very real thing, and that, you know, it's something that millions of people are experiencing right now, right? And mm-hmm. I found this to be true for me as well, especially last year, when I realized that I was subconsciously seeking out information that would infuriate me. Mm. I was subconsciously seeking things that were going to piss me off so I can keep myself in that cycle that I've been told I need to stay in. Right?
Mm-hmm. Ah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Oh my gosh. I was even thinking about that when I identified as a feminist, which I no longer identify as. I hated men. I thought all men were horrible and narcissists. And I continued to attract men that I could be like, see, narcissist, all men suck, yada, 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 to keep myself in that loop of anger, yeah, and disempowerment, you know? Yes. Yeah, that is it's addictive. It's extremely addictive to continue getting those adrenaline hits and to be able to be like, ha ha, see, I'm right.
Right. You know, yeah. And that's why for me, it's also been very important to release all labels. Very, very, very important to release all labels, because when I was over identifying with labels, and I hadn't even realized, I've always thought of myself as kind of like a very free person. I have never even considered myself a feminist. Do I have values that could be aligned with feminism? Yes, but I see them more as just like basic, to me, it's just basic common sense, basic values, right? It doesn't need a label attached, yeah, to it. And also because this is why cultural differences and traditions are so important, because a lot of the conversations that are happening right now, whether you would call it wokeness or social justice or whatever, it's through a very Americanized lens, right? This is where American imperialism comes in. But for me, as someone that was born and raised in Zimbabwe, and I live in the UK, I live in London, the language of feminism is not even really a thing. Did we have people that you would call feminists? Of course, we had many women that were part of uprisings, many women that changed things, but that label isn't as important as it might be here in the West. And I had so many people, feminists, interestingly enough, saying, oh, why would you not call yourself a feminist, blah, 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 whatever the fuck else. And it's like, why do I need a it's to make you feel comfortable. It's not even, you don't even give a shit whether I am doing the right thing or actually caring about what you just want me to wear the fucking label so that you are comfortable with the way that you view the world. So letting go of labels has been huge for me. Even when I think of being Black, right? I would hope that we all know that race in itself is a social construct. Race is something that was constructed to keep the working class divided, right? So once you start to really understand these things, you realize that even over identifying with any label in relation to your skin, again, being born and raised in Zimbabwe and living here in the UK, I would say I actually found out that I was even Black when I was 9 years old, when I came to the UK. Before that, I didn't know. It's not even anything that is spoken of. Skin color isn't spoken of that much or at all in Zimbabwe or in Africa, right? And here in the UK, skin color has never been a priority as much as it might be in the US. So even just this idea of Blackness, I find really strange, because the Black experience, if you like, is not going to be the same for a Black person in Cuba or a Black person in Norway, a Black person in the US, a Black person in Jamaica, a Black person in Zambia. It's completely different. So for me, especially after last summer, it's been really important to honor the fact that I inhabit a Black body. It's a very beautiful thing. I love the shade. I love whatever. It's amazing. but it's a very small and insignificant part of who I, like, it really is. Mm. It really, I don't walk through the world thinking, oh, I can't make this decision because I'm Black. I don't. And we need to be able to honor those experiences as well, because a lot of Black people, they don't want to be walking through the world and their skin color is the first thing that you think of, you know? Mm. And with the way that certain conversations, especially, and I speak about this all the time, especially the way certain conversations are being had around race right now, I truly believe that it's creating a new form of racism where we can't see beyond a person's skin color. Where before I can even treat you as a human being, before I pay attention to your personality, to your sense of humor, find out what your values are, what are your personal ethics, what are your morals, I look at the color of your skin and I already think I have an idea of what you're going to be like. Mm. And I fucking hate that. Mm. And for any liberal person in this room, especially if you were white, please just start to understand the harm that is being done by a lot of these things. Actually speak to Black people instead of regurgitating and parroting the same shit, because we are creating a new form of racism. And if we continue down this path, my goodness, how have we gone back? We've gone back decades. Even, you know what's interesting, and I'll kind of just stop on this point, that the activists of the 50s and 60s, the 40s, 50s, 60s, who were advocating for people to not be seen by the color of their skin first, they would probably be called coons now, yeah. Right? They would probably be called sellouts, because their message does not align with whatever's being put out right now, which is that your skin comes first and we treat you according to your skin, full stop. Can you please make it make sense, Emma, because
I just have chills over here. That like stopped me dead in my tracks, because Africa, to be honest, like this is how deep this indoctrination goes. And I just want to be really real with you. I was like, how dare you say that? Like a part of me was like, no, that's not correct. Like reverse racism I don't know if you were necessarily saying reverse rate or racism towards white people, but like there was a part of me that was like, she can't say that, because the racism that people are talking about is way worse than what Africa's talking about now. That's how deep the indoctrination goes.
And you know what? And there's someone listening to this or watching this that is thinking the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. Thinking the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. And that is how dehumanization works, where you start to justify your own dehumanization. And you're seeing this with white people. They will justify, you know, I've said it before in my comments, and I don't get it so much now. I will have white women in particular, and I want to find out actually, because it seems to be more so women that get sucked into these spaces, which I find very interesting. I thought of that the other day, but anyway, I'll have white people kind of self-flagellating in my DMs before they even say what they want to say. It would be things like, as a white person, I know I am white, but, and I'm like, hey, what? You don't need to say that. Why are you saying that? That's really weird. I'm like, that's really weird. Why are you saying that?
I've experienced that too, like on the flip of a Black woman coming into my space. And I'm so in tune with my body now. I know when I'm being manipulated, or I know when I'm being pressed on, and I don't question it anymore because I'm so in harmony. I know when something's off. And I have had multiple Black women come in my space and use that same thing to weaponize and essentially stand over me. Because you can just say that as a Black woman, and then as a white woman, I'm supposed to just be like, yes to anything you say.
Yes, yes. And I will be very honest about this. And you know what, Emma, what we're talking about right now are things that people don't want to talk about. Well, guess what? We have to talk about it. We have to be honest.
I just want to be honest too. Like, this is uncomfortable. I feel uncomfortable.
Yes, because now you're seeing, and I've had, because of the conversations that I'm also opening up, because there's, for me, there is no judgment, there is no shame. We just need to actually start talking so things can change, so that actual progress can happen. But I'm now also getting a lot of black people, brown people, people that are non-white, telling me that they have, I'm getting chills, telling me that they have weaponized their race to get their way because of the way that conversations are happening now. And if you have the time, you can go through some of my comments on the posts that I've done recently. Some people have also shared similar experiences that they've ended up doing that because then, and I would also say that subconsciously I've done this. Subconsciously I have done this. Why? Because it means that I don't have to take any responsibility. It means that I can shut you down because you've asked a genuine question, right? You have asked a genuine question or expressed a contradiction. You've noticed a contradiction and you've put it forward. And because I don't have a strong enough argument to counter that, and because I've been regurgitating and parroting scripts, I don't have anything to say. So what's the next best thing I can do? My race. Because I know that is going to shut you up. And I know that because, especially if this is happening on a public forum, many people are going to support me and they are going to dehumanize and shame you. So I don't have to take any responsibility. My belief system doesn't have to be interrupted. And, you know, I get to feed my ego at the same time because I have put you in your place. So I get to honor whatever resentment I feel. I get to punish you as well. I get to humiliate you as well. And nothing changes for me.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that. I can speak to that too as an experience, or as my experience being a woman, and how I've done that exact same thing with men.
Yes. Oh yeah. Yeah.
100%. And how when there's a main narrative that's going on, if you can somehow manipulate the conversation into aligning with that, then you literally get to throw your hands up and be like, sorry, it's your problem. And you, again, you have to take no responsibility. And I want to address too, how it's like almost this weird, kinky, like orgasmic experience that you have with like that, because there's a deep shadowy part of all of us that enjoy not taking responsibility and enjoy being like the judge and just pointing fingers at everybody. It's fun.
Sure. Oh,
in an unconscious way.
100%. And it's not exclusive to race. It's not exclusive to gender. Mm-hmm. It's in so many situations. And there's also nuance there, right, to what we were talking about weaponizing race. It's about us also being able to discern whether someone genuinely is saying, actually, for example, actually, Emma, this is where you could have understood, because I am a black person and I just want to share what my experience has actually been, which would be a very different situation compared to someone saying something like, which is what I see all the time, someone saying something like, well, you're white. Okay, all right. Because we're at that point now where that's apparently a strong argument to actually just shut down an entire dialogue. Well, you're white. Okay, so.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, 100%. That's another super important point, because people are not trying to have conversations. They're not, hearts are not open. They're not coming from a place of genuine inquiry and curiosity. They're coming from a place of fear, anger, rage, and wanting to just have something or someone to dump all of those emotions onto. And I think sorry, go ahead.
No, go on.
I was just saying, I think it's really easy to be able to tell now with people who are not trying to have a conversation with me. I do not give them the time of day. Yeah, I am definitely willing and open and invite those conversations when somebody's like, hey, this is just my experience as a black person or as a Latinx person, you know? But when it's like, oh, you're white, and they're again automatically racializing me and judging me based on the color of my skin with no interest in who I am as a human being, I'm done.
Yeah.
There's no conversation to be had.
Good, good. And you know what? This is, I'm always talking about the fact that as self-aware adults, as adults, full fucking stop, we need to be more courageous. And what you just said is really important for anyone listening to this, because if you are someone that wants true change, and we all do, if you want someone that actually cares about human rights, and I would love to believe that we all do, if you are someone that truly wants to see a way in which we can coexist as human beings, and it's never going to be perfect, because I also believe that there are so many people seeking utopia and it's not going to happen. It is not going to fucking happen. And you're seeing this now, right? Stripping away all individuality, stripping away all diversity of thought, wanting everyone to be exactly the same, think exactly the same. We will all get the same results. No, that's not actually how it works, right? We need to be more courageous to say, I'm not playing this game anymore. I'm not doing it. I am not doing it. Because we continue to feed this beast, and it is a beast, and it didn't happen overnight. It didn't happen overnight. We have all contributed to this in one way or another, which means we can contribute to the collective healing. And I don't say that in a kind of passive way. I really mean that, because we're and you know, none of this is to make you afraid, because there's enough fear mongering out there, but it's to really allow you to realize that you can play a part in this. And it can literally start with you saying, I am not playing that game anymore. I'm not going to play that game anymore. I'm not doing that. Because when we treat each other, because I saw someone earlier, they asked a question, when we say narrative, what are we talking about? When we say ideology, what exactly are we talking about in this conversation? It's a multitude of things. There are so many narratives right now that we're just supposed to take hook, line, and sinker, and you can't question them at all. But you know, the reality is that one of the biggest ways in which we are being divided right now is by race. It is by race. So when I say things like not playing that game anymore, it can literally just start there, that I am not going to judge, and I mean, I can't believe I'm saying this in 2021, I'm not going to judge myself because of the color of my skin. I'm not going to use cultish terms like white fragility, white fear. I'm not going to racialize my emotions, and I'm not going to do the same for anyone else, you know? And these are all just simple, basic things, are they not?
Yeah, I mean, they really are simple, and it's common sense is not so common anymore.
No.
And that's what is, it's, there's so many nuances to all of what we're saying. And I wanted to quickly mention the term white tears and to talk about how I believe how abusive that is. And also how it inflicts more harm to all parties. Because if we are pointing fingers at white people and saying that they're not allowed to have emotion, they're not allowed to express, they're not allowed to cry, that is going to, again, it's the person's choice, but that is creating a narrative that we need to stuff our emotions down and not express them and not feel and to put ourselves aside, which down the line, if we really let that seep into our subconscious, that is going to cause so much more harm. Where there's a pendulum swing where white people are the bad guy, and then 300 years from now, the pendulum's gonna swing again where black folks are the bad guy. That we're using the same tactics that everybody essentially is collectively claiming to hate. And how, I said, the pendulum is gonna continue to swing where it's somebody's being oppressed and then somebody's the oppressor, and it's just gonna keep flip-flopping until I don't have but I would, the way that I feel in my being is until everybody really does learn to reclaim their own self-sovereignty. That's what creates ripple effects of healing. That's my personal belief.
Yeah. And what do you think about, I think we were at white tears as well. And maybe we could come to that. But what do you think about people that say, people that are really afraid that they will lose everything they have, be it their jobs, be it their relationships with people, et cetera, et cetera. What is your take on that? When people say, you know, I would love to speak up, I would love to actually share how I feel, I would love to put my ideas out into the world, I would love to even just talk to my friends about some of these things, but I'm very, very afraid. What would you say to that?
Whew. First of all, I empathize with being in that position so much because I have been there, and it's a really scary place to be in. What I would say to that is you have two choices. You can continue to play this character and to continue to lie to yourself and lie to those around you. There's nothing quote unquote wrong with that. If you want to live that life of being a shell of yourself and constantly being in loops of suffering and never really understanding why, yeah. Or you can take the really brave road, I believe, and decide to speak with your fucking chest and say what is on your heart and stand on your own sacred ground and share your truth and realize that those people or that job or whoever you're afraid of losing didn't actually love you if they leave because you share more of your truth. They loved an idea of you that you and I both talk about this. You have no responsibility to live up to.
I
think you wrote something where it was like any group that requires your blind compliance to a narrative or an ideology is a cult. Yeah. That can be a person. That can be one person too.
Yeah. Yes. Because sometimes we think we are in community when we're actually in a cult dynamic, you know, we get the two conflated so much. And I would also say, and this is something that I constantly say, I think at this point in time, because of the urgency, I truly believe that it is a collective urgency that we're seeing in the culture. We can't rely on a single voice. We can't rely on five voices. We can't rely on everything, on everyone else to speak on your behalf. We can't rely on Emma, can't rely on Africa. You have to cultivate your own, what I call internal authority, because we've been we've been allowing everyone else to be the authority of us. And again, I'm not saying anything radical. I'm not saying anything revolutionary. The evidence is already there because we're at this point for a reason, right? We're at this point for a reason. And something I say is that I think you have to be willing to lose something. You have to be willing to lose something. And sometimes we overestimate what the loss is going to be. Of course, you know yourself best. I don't know what your jobs are. I don't know what it is you do. But you don't have to approach any of these things in a public way. I don't think that's always necessary. I think you can actually do it in a very private, silent way. Just start to have conversations you wouldn't normally have. Start listening to voices you wouldn't normally listen to. I always like bringing up Jordan Peterson because... And I will tell you why. Because I believe that in this lifetime, in my 28 years of life, I've never seen anyone be more misrepresented. I really haven't. Not on that scale. I really, really haven't. I remember in 2018, I saw a 3-minute clip, Emma, and I decided that this man was the most evil man I have ever listened to. A 3-minute clip. In 3 minutes. And I've listened back to that clip now multiple times, 3 years on, and he's making complete sense. He's just giving statistics and data and talking about why the gender pay gap is actually quite misunderstood because, you know, the main reason is that most women don't actually negotiate, which is true, so that contributes to it. He was having a very reasoned, logical but I was like, this man hates us.
How dare he? Then you go on Facebook and you're like, listen up, people.
This man fucking hates us all.
And then literally everybody with their pitchforks is like, yeah! And you're like, ah!
Oh my goodness. This man, Jordan Peterson, you know, to me, he has been one of my biggest inspirations amongst many people. I would say Aisha Akanbi is also a really powerful and beautiful voice. Mm-hmm. And I love that she's in the UK, she's in London. She's someone that I resonate with on so many different levels. And I just listen to people that I know I just normally would not listen to. Mm. And people that I would have at a point in time maybe heard from someone saying, oh, they're racist or they're a misogynist, they're transphobic, so you shouldn't listen to them. Mm-hmm. But now I'm like, wait, let me find out for myself. And mm-hmm. then I can make my own decision, right? Mm-hmm. It's that simple. It's mm-hmm. that simple, but that's not the space that we're guided to a lot of the time, right? Mm-hmm. So I've just been thinking, and I would recommend doing this actually, who are some of the people that you've been told are quote unquote problematic and you shouldn't listen to them, don't even go there, just explore what they have to say. And sometimes you might come to a decision of saying, actually, it's too much, I don't agree, yes, they are this, they are that, but mm-hmm. let that be your decision. Mm-hmm. Because for me, it was not my decision. Even the person that showed me that 3-minute clip of Jordan Peterson, they had already decided how I should feel. Even the mm-hmm. way they presented that clip to me, oh my goodness, you should see this mm-hmm. man, whatever that was. They've already decided how I should feel. I've already picked mm-hmm. up that energy and I'm already pruned and primed to respond in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And because in that time, I wasn't anything that was factual or anything that was research, anything that was whatever, to me, it was a threat. And I wouldn't have said those words in this way. But yeah, I would just recommend and listen to some people. Someone just said Katie Hopkins' name. And for me, I have listened to what she has to say. But for me, there's no understanding. For me, that's someone where there's no common ground. I respect her humanity. I don't want her to be disposed of or anything like that. But there are some things that are very much racist. There are some things that are very specifically supposed to hurt a group of people. But I'm glad that was my decision to make. And I don't wish any harm on her. I think she's quite hilarious, actually, in the interview that I saw. But we just don't align in our values and in our morals and in our ethics. But that was my decision to make. And I love that so much. Let it be my decision.
That's so beautiful too, and it also is so powerful because you're not attacking her character. You're just saying she aligns with things that feel wrong or harmful or icky to me, so I choose not to associate with her. And that's such a really important distinction, you know, because we throw the baby out with the bathwater so many times. When somebody says one thing that we don't agree with, we automatically throw a label onto them. And we're essentially like, it's very harmful. And so I think that's really important that we need to start not labeling people as evil or dangerous or racist or whatever. We can say that was a racist action, or that was harmful, or that was hurtful. But to encompass somebody's entire humanity into one action, I don't want people to judge me based on one thing that I maybe said or one thing that I did. I wasn't in alignment at the time, you know? So why would I do that to other people?
I agree. And you know what, Emma, to be able to do that, what you just said, it takes more. And I say that because it's much easier, isn't it, to project, to punish, to humiliate, to shame, and to not have to be responsible for the complexities of someone else's humanity, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what we need to make more room for, being able to sit and tolerate the complexities of someone's humanity. And this is not me saying that you need to forgive anything, or you should just ignore, or people should get away with anything, because people love to put this idea forward of, well, are you saying freedom of consequence? I'm like, shut the fuck up. No one said that. What are you talking? No one said that. No one has ever said, I want freedom of consequence. That's not what anyone is saying, okay? We're just saying that it's actually much more complex than we realize, and we need to, instead of those knee-jerk reactions, just create space for yourself to explore it and say, is it actually this? is it actually this? And is this label that I really want to throw out there, because it's so easy to just throw it out there, could this actually be the truth, or could it be more than that, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's just what I think. And really just coming back to deciding for yourself how you feel. Just decide for yourself.
And honor that too. And no matter, again, what color you are, specifically like from my experience as a white person, like for so long, I was denying that I was allowed to feel any type of way about current events or racial issues. I wasn't allowed to cry about it, going back to the white tears thing. And my freedom came to a point where I honored my own humanity and honored whatever was arising within me and allowed that to just be what it is without having to make myself wrong. And that is where so much of my own freedom has come from, is that simple distinction of just not making myself wrong. And how many times in little tiny instances do we try to make or at least for me, I've tried to make myself be the bad guy, because again, that's playing into the oppressor oppressed dynamic that we're all conditioned under. If I'm not the oppressed, then I have to be the oppressor. Again, it's like I'm not playing that game anymore.
No, we don't have to. And this doesn't mean that that we don't care, because, and I'd love to know, if you still have a bit of time, I would love to know what some of the, is objections the right word that people, you know, in the similar vein of when people say shit like, so what you're saying is, so is this what you're saying?
Yep. That's when you're just like, right? Oh, I gotta go.
Okay. It's like, okay. All right. Okay. And I say that because what I was just about to say is, no one is saying that, you know, injustice doesn't exist. No one is saying that suffering doesn't exist. If you want to use language like institutional racism, then please do feel free to use that. But it's really important that we don't start to tear apart other people because they're not using the exact language that you want to use or that you think is appropriate. Because this is something that I'm also seeing very much so as well. And it doesn't take culture into play. It doesn't take neurodiversity into play either. It's very elitist. It's very classist. It's assuming that everyone is a fucking academic. I'm sick of Instagram academics, Twitter academics, you know, thinking that if they can use big fancy words, you know, gender theory, feminist theory, critical race theory, then you are better than everyone else. You're not. Because for me, just because I won't use the terms that you want me to use, and I'm not talking about how anyone identifies, I will always respect how you identify. In that same vein, if I have certain questions or I'm confused, I'm going to ask, okay? Mm-hmm. But I'm just sick of this weaponization of language, this terminology that is changing every single day. And if you're not keeping up with it, then you are a bigot, then you are this, then you are that. That is cult-like. That is cult-like, whether you like it or not. And I will say it again, it's very elitist. And to me, it's not an accident that class is never spoken about, because we're being distracted from actually focusing on the class divide, which in my eyes is much, 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 it's a much bigger problem worldwide, globally, right?
For folks, it's easier to focus on this, for lack of better words, petty shit. Because it makes them feel like they're a part of the movement or they're doing something, when really taking the time and intentional action to get down and get nitty gritty takes an amount of courage and bravery and sacrifice that people who are sitting here complaining about language and complaining about these tiny little details aren't necessarily, not that they're not capable, that they're not willing to do. They're not willing to do the down and dirty work.
Yes, I do. 100%. And I speak so strongly about this because I don't believe in over coddling. I believe we're in a culture right now of over validation to the point of enabling. Because once you validate someone so much, it just becomes enabling. You know, and to me, in the way that I see it, especially as someone that is from a country where the general population are oppressed, right, by the government, Zimbabwe is where I'm from. even though I live in the UK. So we came here to the UK because of the state of the country, because the country was so broken. So when I see, even with my family, even when we have these conversations, when you see some of the things that are hyper-focused on now, you have to be very privileged if all you can complain about is the people not using the exact language that you want them to use, the language that you learned in university, which is another privilege in itself, for you to live in the West, which is one of the biggest privilege. If you live in the Western world, right, in the Anglosphere, whether that's the US or the UK, Australia, New Zealand, you are one of the most privileged people in the world just because of your geography. And that this is really, really important. But no one talks about that, right? So when I start to look at the things that people are really throwing all of their outrage at, it's just, I mean,
Yeah, it's part
of the, but it's part of the distraction. It's part of the much bigger distraction, so that we don't focus on what we really need to be focusing on.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm not doing it anymore. I can't give my energy to this anymore. And I see the real life repercussions, whether it's the clients that I work with, whether it's the parents that are sending me messages telling me their 3 year olds in kindergarten are being taught that, you know, their classmates are oppressors and they are oppressed and they are disadvantaged. To me, that's the driving force for the way that I speak. I could not fucking care less about what someone has to say in a comment section because I see the real life repercussions, and that's where my focus is going to be. I will not coddle anyone. I won't overvalidate anyone. And I won't shut up and comply if I have questions. I just won't do it. I won't do it.
I would love, I know we've been on for so long, I just have like a couple more questions if you have time.
I do.
I'd love to sort of explore with you this idea that white people collectively are responsible for the actions of our ancestors. Because in my understanding and in my consciousness in this moment and at this time in my life, I logically, that doesn't make sense to me, because if that were to be true, then no matter what color you are, you, if your grandpa was, excuse me, a rapist, then you would need to be held accountable for his actions, no matter what color you are, and X, Y, and Z, and on and et cetera, et cetera. While I do, at the same time, I want to provide nuance, understand, I do believe, obviously, that racism is a thing. I've witnessed it myself. My oldest brother is Black. I grew up around Black culture in America. I absolutely have witnessed it. At the same time, I don't necessarily resonate with the, I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'm just going to say, I don't resonate with the idea that white people are to be held accountable for the actions of our ancestors that I have nothing to do with. And I know that I'm not a racist person. Yes, maybe I was exposed to some racism, just the reality of being a white person growing up in America, but I know in my heart and soul that I am not a racist person. So why should I regress my consciousness and go back and apologize and make myself responsible for actions that I did not commit?
Yeah. And this is something that I completely agree with. I completely agree with that. And to me, it seems like common sense, because I don't see how, that's helpful. What I think is very important is acknowledging the history, is not denying the history. That's the important piece in which I see it, right? It's understanding how, because of what happened, and I mean, I'm not American, so I can't speak to this in a really articulate way, but and maybe someone here in the comment section could actually help us and maybe give some insight into what they think it actually is. But I think it's really taking into account the generational trauma that was caused because of what has happened, acknowledging the pain that the country is in because of what has happened, And being able to honor the advantages that some people have had because of the pillaging, because of all of these other things, right? Which I think is an important part of it. And I would like to believe that the majority of people, and you can speak to this better than I can, I'm sure, I would like to believe that a lot of people do want to make right with what has happened and to not deny it, to not strip it from the history books, to not stop it from being a part of the conversation. And at the same time, there needs to be room for finding a way to actually make peace with that without it being used as a shaming tool forevermore.
I absolutely hear what you're saying, and I definitely agree. And I think that, yes, absolutely, collectively as white folks, specifically in America, it is imperative to acknowledge and understand deep embedded racism within our country. But at the same time, it becomes a form of martyrdom that can actually continues to center the white experience. So counterintuitive and kind of, again, egos are really tricky, but continues to center the white experience in being like, well, oh my God, I need to take all of this accountability now and I need to pay reparations, which I actually believe in reparations, but like I need to do all of these things and make up for. That's still centering your own experience. I would rather be like, hey, this fucked up shit happened. Let's like, what can we do together to fix it?
I agree. You know, and someone also
victim-y martyrdom stuff happening. Sorry, go ahead.
And someone also has made a point to add to that, which is adding that the racism is not just in the past. And I would say no one has said that, and no one is implying that either. Racism exists now, but it's not, this is also very important. Racism is not exclusive to America. Racism is always going to exist all over the world. But of course, we're speaking about America in this particular conversation, right? So it's being able to understand all of those things, that it does exist now, and we need to be having those conversations about it. But specifically, I guess the question that I'm seeing here coming out of you, Emma, is that, is it useful to keep on weaponizing the fact that white people are descendants of slave owners in every conversation, in every interaction, as in, is that useful for progress? And I don't think it is.
I don't think it is either. Because again, too, not every single white person is a descendant of a slave owner. That's just not possible, you know? Yes. And again, that even matters. It's still the fact of like, why do we continue to infuse these narratives of division and anger and hatred and just horrible things? Like, why are we not shifting the conversation to forward movement, to progress, to healing for everyone, no matter what color that you are? Because the truth is that when white people heal, and when white people really heal, because when people are really healed, they do not commit harm to other people. They do not hoard wealth in such a way that other people are suffering. That's not real healing. When white people are healed, everybody heals. When black people heal, everybody heals. You know what I'm saying? It creates a ripple effect. And that's, I think, the point that we're getting at is, in history, is it feels like in order for a certain group to access healing, and I could be wrong as a white person speaking from this perspective, I don't know. Actually, I don't even need to say that. This is my truth and I'm going to share it. When a group of people are accessing healing, they have to step on other people's heads to get there. And I just wonder how we can not do that anymore.
And also someone else just added another point, which is so important, is that this is why this idea, which I don't agree with, which I think is also part of what you and I are both saying, the grouping of white people. It's much more complex than that. Someone just said there are whites who immigrated to the US in the 1900s, potato famine. Exactly. There are many, it's this idea that all white people are the same, in the same way that all black people are the same. So all white people are descendants of oppressors and slave owners, and that is final, that is it. all Black people that are in the US are descendants of slaves, and that is final, that is it. There is no nuance, there is no gray. This is what it is and always will be. Mm-hmm. That's the idea. Like, there's no, yeah, I don't think, yeah.
There's just no room for progress. And again, it's not about denying, it's about acknowledging, but then being like, how can we continue to move forward and heal rather than continue to regress and just sit in this space of like, oh, woe is all of us. I'm the oppressor and I suck and I'm so sorry. Like, that helps nobody. That helps no one.
Yeah. And I also think, you know, even just by having this conversation, it's really important because maybe there's someone on the other side of this screen, and I'm sure there always is, that believes that they know better. They believe that they have the answers. They believe that we are wrong. How can you be saying this? No one has said that. How dare you think this? But listen, are you courageous enough to have this conversation publicly in this way? And that's a genuine question. Because this exchange that Emma and I are having, it's not about being right. We're exploring in the same way that I would hope that you are as well, somewhere. I am a Black woman who is an immigrant from Zimbabwe and I'm in London. Emma is where she is, okay? And we are exploring is where she is. And we are exploring.
I'm from Kansas.
Emma's from Kansas.
I'm American.
And we're exploring this conversation out loud in the same way that we would if we were sharing tea or sharing food at the table. It's not about being right. We're not academics. So please, before you come into the comments or wherever, well, why didn't you say this? Well, the real reason, please, I hope that you are daring to have these conversations too. I really do.
Thank you for saying that.
I really
that.
Do.
I really, really appreciate that. Yeah. Because it's funny, because even in my own humanness, I've mentioned a couple of times throughout this conversation that this is uncomfortable, even with somebody as that I know, like, you are so safe, you're a safe person, and we know each other on some level, like, it's still uncomfortable to dive deep like this and to explore these things. But Africa and I have oriented ourselves in such a way where we're not living in fear anymore, and we're not afraid of saying the wrong thing. And we know that when we engage with in conversations like this, we're engaging with people that are sovereign within themselves and who can speak up in a respectful and kind and compassionate way.
And you know, something that I noticed, which really snapped me out of everything that I was in last year, the year before that, was really understanding that there are some people that genuinely don't want progress, Emma. There are some people that are so used to the cycle of dysfunction, used to the cycle of blame, used to the cycle of anger. And I'm not against anger. I think righteous anger can be such a beautiful thing. Oh my, it can be such a beautiful thing. But there are people that are addicted to that dysfunction. They don't want things to get better. They want punishment and revenge. And, you know, you're entitled to feel how you want to feel. But I noticed that when I started to even explore this idea that I don't want to dehumanize anyone on the path to progress, on the path to uniting, I don't want to dehumanize anyone on the way. I don't want to dehumanize white people. I don't want to dehumanize men. I love both. I engage with both in my real life. I have evidence to support the fact that these are what my values are, not what I'm engaging in right now. And there would be people that are genuinely against the idea of unity. There are people that are genuinely against that. For some reason, it's been positioned as wrong, you know, that it's some kind of luxury to want unity. Is that really where we are, where people are suspicious of messages about unity? That it's much more comfortable if we're all just in dysfunction, if we're all just in blame, if we're all just externalizing. And if someone dares to say, hey, is there a chance of doing both, but doing it so we can bring people together, that's cause for suspicion.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's a hard truth to come to terms with as well, because it feels as if these days that is the majority. There's a large majority of people who, when you share a message of unity and love and compassion and nuancedness, that's a word, they come at you and say that you're harmful and dangerous. You know, and that's why I wrote a post about that the other day. Like, that's proof that we are living in sort of a perverted type of reality right now, where up is down is and down is up. And it feels as if, my theory is that there's this like parasitic energy that has kind of gotten a hold of all of our subconscious brains, and fear and division and anger, not necessarily anger, but that chronic anger, because I also love anger. It's a wonderful tool, a necessary form of expression, but all of these quote unquote negative states of being are its food, and the parasite grows the more and more we feed it. And when you are coming out of that parasitic energy and choosing to shift into these states of compassion and love and unity and et cetera, it feels like a death in my experience. Because when you have those addictive tendencies to continue looping in these painful states and suffering states of being, you don't know who the fuck you are without them.
Right.
And love becomes such a distant fantasy of a reality that you don't even know how to hold that in your body.
Oh, I resonate with that so much. And again, I also believe that the majority, and someone else just said this in the comments actually, so there's synchronicity here, but I believe that the majority do want unity. I feel and think that to be able to continue doing the work that I do around supporting people to move out of self-censorship and self-sabotage on an individual level and collective level, and to be able to be of support even to my family and the children in my life and my community, I have to believe that the majority do want unity. I have to move away from, you know, the messages that are being pushed online, where we're made to believe that the world is more divided than it actually is. Because when I step out into the real world on a day to day, it's not how it's seeming here. And this is not to say there's no division. Of course there is, and there's suffering. Please, there always will be, there always will be. But I remain hopeful because I am more interested in connecting with the real world than what I'm being told the real world looks like. So I'm very hopeful that most people do want unity. It's just that we have very different ideas about how we get there. And that's what we need to honor. The fact that we all have very different ideas of how we're going to get there. And we need to be willing to listen to each other. Even if, you know, someone's listening to this conversation, they're like, oh, that's a load of bullshit or whatever. What's happening here is a demonstration of actually being willing to listen. And we need to try and model that in as many places as we can. Because, yeah, we all have different ideas about what it's going to look like to unite.
I appreciate that reflection too, because I think the part of me that says that most people don't want unity is still identifying with that old paradigm of we're just going to continue to live in division and anger and pointing fingers at one another. And I think there's still a part of me that feels hopeless of ever coming out of that space collectively. Thank you for that reflection and reflecting that back to me, because when I sit with myself and really tune into my heart, absolutely, people do, everybody wants unity on a soul level. And that's why we see so much pain and suffering happening. It's because people are trying to bring themselves back to center and are just doing it sometimes in harmful and fucked up and messy and gross ways. But we're all genuinely just doing the best we can to recalibrate ourselves at all times.
Yes.
And even the people who cause harm, and even the people who continue to perpetuate division and all of these narratives, they're also just doing the best they can with what they know how. And I think that's something really important to come back to as well. Not making them wrong either, because that can also become a cult-like dynamic where it's like, I'm so enlightened and intelligent and everybody else is just asleep. I never want to be like that.
Yes.
I don't want to ever make any process or their experience wrong, ever.
Yes. I love that you say that, and maybe that's a good place to round this off on, because I think about this often, is that with everything that I'm experiencing now and just kind of feeling like I'm finally stepping into my body, into my mind, into my thoughts, into my opinions, my beliefs, I don't want to end up being self-righteous. That's something that I don't want to end up recreating that very same shit in a different way, which is why, even though the open letter that I wrote is why I'm leaving the cult of wokeness, that was very intentional. And in the letter, I break down where the term woke actually came from, and I use it very intentionally in there as well. But this is why I will never refer to people as, oh, the woke keep doing this, the woke, because to me, that's doing the exact same shit that I am trying to move away from. So as I'm talking about not dehumanizing people and, you know, removing judgment, even though I'm very firm in my delivery, and I say this always, I'm very firm in my delivery. I'm not going to fluff anything up for anyone, but I will always be respectful. I'll always be compassionate, but I don't want to ever find myself recreating the very same thing that I moved away from. And I see this all the time with people that more so identify as being on the right, even though I don't, you know, where it ends up being a, well, those leftists are doing this, well, those woke people are this, well, where we start to group everything as woke, because caring about human beings is not necessarily woke, right? Caring about being inclusive to trans people and LGBT people, and wanting everyone to live in their individuality, that's not necessarily, that doesn't fall under wokeness. That's just, you know. So the reason I'm saying all of this, and then on the other side of that, being, calling everything alt-right, oh my God, you're alt-right, oh, you're this, you're that. So it's, everyone's using the same fucking framework. Everyone thinks they're so unique and different and their group is the right, everyone's using the same fucking framework. And I really want to make sure that in the way that I approach, and I would like to think that I'm already doing that, is to not end up adopting the very same framework and just dressing it up a little bit and just calling it something new. You know, always finding that balance, really being in the gray as much as possible, so that it's, so that I'm no longer swinging the other way and then I'm looking at them and I'm pointing at them, right? So yeah, that's the space that I'm in, and I choose to remain in that very balanced gray where I'm able to honor them. And I mean, I love to make fun of people anyway, to laugh, to make, you know, but it's all in good fun, you know, because I was there. I know it so well. But I will never be righteous. And I think that's maybe something we can all consider as we're breaking out of certain echo chambers to not end up creating another one, essentially.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a perfect place to end, because that, yeah, I think that really encompasses just the message of love and compassion for every single human being on this planet that we both really stand by. And again, too, yeah, it is super important, because I've even found myself going there to, like, into the self-righteous, I'm super conscious way of being, which it's fun to play there sometimes. But, like, I know myself enough now to be like, okay, Emma, let's check your ego. You're not better than anybody just because you think differently, you know? And again, letting people have their own process and seeing every phase and every, I guess I would venture to say, level of consciousness, every cycle of consciousness, as such a necessary, integral part of the whole of this human experience. And when we make other people wrong, there's a really good chance that we're making a part of ourselves wrong too.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Yes. Oh, amazing. Oh, I love that. I love
I would love to ask you one more question that I just ask everybody, because I'm going to be uploading this audio to my podcast. What is the biggest thing in your life that you have unlearned so far?
The biggest thing in my life that I have unlearned so far. I would say the biggest thing I unlearned, which is actually what kickstarted me on the path that I'm on now in terms of the work that I do, how I use my voice. I had to unlearn the belief that I needed to drink alcohol excessively. I needed to snort something anonymous, that I needed to smoke something to really feel like me. And I say that because I'm sober. So I'll be 5 years sober this year. And it took me a very long time to realize that I didn't need any of those things to be able to access the best parts of my world. I didn't need any of those things to be desirable or to have the best sex or to form the best relationships or to enter a room and feel comfortable, you know. And I truly thought I needed all of those things, especially alcohol, for such a long time, for a decade, from the age of 14 to 24. And just to extend this just a tiny bit, I would say my sobriety is actually what allows me to be able to see the humanity in people, because I relapsed seven times before the eighth time finally stuck. And because I was a very beautiful but messy individual, I had a lot of shadow that was surfacing, a lot of darkness. I could be very cruel. I lied, I manipulated, I did so many things. And if I hadn't been given the chance at life by other people and by myself, I would have been disposed of, I would have been disposed of. That's why I don't believe in this idea that people are disposable. I don't believe that people are the mistakes that they've made. Because now I just honor the mess. I love people that are messy and awkward and just strange and fucked up. Those are my favorite types.
Me too. They're so fun. They're literally just fun, eclectic, and juicy. And I was telling one of my friends that last night. I was like, I'm just ready to be my freaky,
Now you're back. Last I heard, I cut off for a second. You're just ready to be your...
just my freaky and fun and weird and spicy and strange self. Like, that's, again, a message that I want folks to take away from this. And I wrote a little, this poetic writing that I wrote the other day, to protect your quirks and to protect your strangeness and to celebrate it. Because, again, you mentioned this earlier, there's so much of this coercing. There's so much of this coercing us into this like homogenous monolith of a species. One of my friends used that term a few weeks ago to me, and I was like, holy shit, that describes exactly the consciousness that I see happening. And so just protect the things that make you unique and weird and funky, and to just not be afraid to embrace those aspects and those characteristics of you.
Oh, so beautiful. So beautiful. Thank you so much. Thank you, Emma. Thank you. I've really, really, this conversation has been very important and revealing, actually, because I would say it's the first time that I've had this kind of conversation and the places that we've gone today. And I'm sure we could go even deeper. And I would love to do this again with you, because I feel like we've just barely scratched the surface, right?
Yeah.
But I really want to thank you for the way in which you allow yourself to be seen, to be visible. It's not an easy thing. It's not an easy thing, you know, and people, you're a strong person, you're a courageous person, but this culture that we're in right now, it gets to people. It kills people. It kills people. I've worked with a lot of people that are on the brink of suicide because of what is happening right now. So to be able to see you and to be able to just see you share your ideas, knowing that, you know, the goal isn't to be right and you'll still do it anyway, even if people decide to misrepresent you on your own platform, you will still accept yourself as you are, and continue to do what needs to be done. And I have to commend you for that. Thank you so much. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you. And I want to reflect that back to you as well. I received that, first of all. That is so kind of you. And that means a lot to me, especially coming from someone just as brave and as fierce as you. But what I said at the beginning, that your liberation has given me so much permission to liberate more of myself. I cannot thank and honor you enough for your voice and the work that you do and your thoughts and words and fearlessness and just your entire being. You are such an inspiration to me, and I have so much love in my heart for who you are and for your existence on this planet. So thank you so much.